This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. In this week's program, the Central African Republic is being urged to take action on foreign fighters, and an estimated 900 million more Africans will be living in cities by 2050. But first, what's been described as a complicated electoral process is now underway in Somalia. The indirect elections are being held to choose a parliament and president, with hopes that one person, one vote elections will take place in 2020. Michael Keating is the UN Secretary General's special representative for Somalia and head of the UN mission in the country, UNSOM. Deanne Penn asked him about the complexity and significance of the electoral process.
Many Somalis were hoping to have what most countries would recognize as proper elections. But that, they agreed about a year ago, would not be possible. There isn't the institutional infrastructure that you need to conduct one-person, one-vote elections. So it was decided to design a hybrid model, which in a way is an advance on 2012, when 135 clan elders chose 275 MPs. Those clan elders, by the way, were all male. So you'll have an upper house of 54 people chosen on a regional basis and a lower house of 275 MPs chosen through electoral colleges, with those electoral colleges chosen by clan elders. So it's quite a complicated system, but it's definitely a big step forward. And it is generating a lot of excitement all around the country, with a lot more than 14,000 people involved.
And now there will also be presidential elections held next month. How does the parliamentary elections feed into that?
Well, the 54 MPs from the upper house and the 275 MPs from the lower house will come together first to elect a speaker, and then they will elect the president. And the president should be chosen, if the schedule holds, by the 30th of November.
The process has been delayed several times. Were you concerned?
Yes, very concerned, because the Somalis have written a big memo to themselves to the effect that they must have elections every 4 years. And if that slips, then it's very bad news in terms of making sure that Somalia's political journey away from violence and towards a more democratic system would be in jeopardy. Every aspect of this electoral model has been negotiated politically. Most of the political problems have been addressed, but the problems now are largely practical. And what's rather amazing about this process is that even though it is Somali-led, Somali-designed, Somali-implemented, the UN has been absolutely central in providing technical advice, financial support, bringing people together for discussions, design the model. I think we've been doing exactly what the UN should be doing, which is, you know, respecting national ownership, but at the same time injecting standards, bringing advice to bear, mobilizing the international community to ensure that the resources are available, and so on.
Around 900 million people will move to cities in Africa over the next 35 years, according to a director of the African Development Bank, who is attending the UN's Habitat 3 conference in Quito, Ecuador. Amadou Oumarou, who hails from Cameroon, said that the future of society across the continent will be based on steadily growing cities. Habitat 3 has brought national and local leaders from around the world together to rethink how cities can be more sustainable, inclusive, and resilient in the years ahead. Matthew Wells asked Mr. Oumarou how important the conference and the adoption of a new urban agenda is for African cities.
I think it's a big deal because it's really shedding a light on the importance of cities in the world in general, but in Africa in particular, where I mentioned that there's a growing urbanization. In the next 35 years, we are going to have 900 million people moving to cities in Africa. I mean, that's huge. In comparison, that's something that was done in 265 years for combined the US, Europe, and Japan. So if you have this amount of people coming to cities, you can imagine the impact it is going to have on infrastructure, on housing. So this forum that is sort of shedding light on the importance of urban development, that's really where the future of society is, basically. So it's I think it's extremely important.
What are the problems that African cities have faced in growing over the past two decades? I mean, clearly, there's been a lack of urban planning, which is at the heart of everything.
Yeah, lack of urban planning that has led to slums, you know, uncontrolled settlements, lack of infrastructure. The infrastructure that is there actually is not enough to provide the services for the population, that is a growing population. So lack of decent housing also a negative effect on the environment.
So how do you think this new urban agenda can change things for African cities?
I think it's going to provide a momentum and maybe political will. You know, political will and the change of discourse, you know, where people now start focusing more on cities, realizing that, cities has always been the biggest producers of wealth. But it's something that's sort of not, sort of either being ignored or not recognized enough. So this is going to help people realize that. And that's, I think, can make a huge difference.
And for you development bankers, I mean, what kind of role do you see yourselves as playing?
At the African Development Bank, we have defined a number of strategies. We already have an urban development strategy. But we also, just recently, with our new leadership, we have developed five new strategies that are sort of going to guide, you know, the intervention of the bank over the next 10 years. And those are one, light up and power Africa. In the next 10 years, being able to have 100% access to energy for all Africans in just 10 years, which is absolutely a fantastic, formidable challenge. The second strategy is Feed Africa. Africa right now imports more than $35 billion of food. You know, the biggest arable land available in the world is now in Africa.
International human rights experts are urging authorities in the Central African Republic, CAR, to tackle the threat of mercenaries and foreign fighters who have joined armed groups in the country. More than 1,000 foreign combatants, mostly from Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Sudan, are in the CAR, according to the UN Working Group on Mercenaries, which on Wednesday ended a 10-day visit to the country. The CAR has experienced a three-year-long political crisis with deadly clashes between rival groups. More than 5,000 people have been killed, while hundreds of thousands of citizens have been displaced, both within and outside the country. Jean-Pierre Ramazani asked the head of the working group, Anton Katz, about their mission.
The objective is to gather evidence on the question of mercenary and mercenary-related activity and how it affects human rights in the CAR. And that's what we've done. We report back to the Human Rights Council and the General Assembly on our findings, and that we will do next year.
And what were your findings here?
Well, our findings preliminary are that the use of foreigners in the atrocities is a real problem and needs to be sorted out as soon as possible before the peace and justice program can be implemented in an effective and sustainable manner.
Are there mercenaries in Central African Republic?
It seems to me that there certainly are. There's a lot of evidence that there are people who are foreign, who are involved in the armed conflict and are destabilizing and causing problems in the country.
How many are there?
We don't know the exact numbers, but they certainly range to more than 1,000, if not more than a few thousand.
You went in the countryside?
We went to Bria, and we met some people who claimed they were combatants, and they acknowledge that it's a problem. And the big question for us is, who are citizens and who are foreigners? And that needs to be sorted out by the government as soon as possible as well.
Those people that you met, were they mercenaries or not?
They deny that they were mercenaries, but that's an issue that needs to be decided by the government or by the people of Central African Republic.
What comes next?
We write a report and we present it to the Human Rights Council at its session in the third quarter next year.
So what do you think should be done in order to stop these mercenaries' activities in this country?
Well, one of the problems is that there's a porous border, at least between Chad and Sudan and the Central African Republic, and it needs to be considered as to who is a foreigner. Accept the fact that the borders are porous and deal with it accordingly.
Thank you. Do you have a message to send to Central African people?
Just good luck in the process of national unity and reconciliation, and we all hope that things develop in a sustainable and progressive manner so that human rights can be realized and enjoyed for all.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.